Good morning, Chair Postman, Member Garrett, staff and guests. Lobbies are open. Recording is begun.
Thanks, Justice. Good morning, everybody. We'll convene the Tuesday, June 18th meeting of the Liquor and Cannabis Board. Member Vollendorf, couldn't remember his name, is on leave today. Our first item up here is a rules petition review and consideration, and I will call on Jeff Kildall, the Policy and Rules Coordinator, to brief us on that.
Good morning, Chair Postman and Board Member Garrett. This morning, I am presenting the response to a petition for adoption, amendment, or repeal of a state administrative rule we received on April 29th, 2024 from Michael Lucero. This petition requests changes to WAC 314-55-106 regarding what the so-called principal display panel of a cylinder-shaped cannabis package or container is. That's referring to the about the external package. So for background, in 2018, the board amended WAC 314-55-106 to streamline packaging and labeling requirements for cannabis and cannabis products, reducing the amount of information required to be displayed on the packaging, and ensuring that products have enough space on the label to allow required product information to be displayed legibly. This rulemaking project back in 2018 on product labeling was a collaboration with the Washington State Department of Health and the Washington Poison Control Center. It addressed warning labels and requirements, warning consumers about the cannabis content of products, and protecting from accidental exposure to cannabis, especially infused cannabis products. As a result, WAC 314-55-105 and WAC 314-55-106 were amended to require all cannabis products to include the cannabis universal symbol displayed on the principal display panel of the product package. Additionally, these rule changes also require the reproducible, not for kids, warning symbol created by the Washington Poison Center to also be placed on the principal display panel for infused edible cannabis products. Consistent with the rule amendments, the board updated the cannabis packaging and labeling guide in 2020 with illustrations and descriptions showing how the principal display panel is determined for different styles of cannabis packaging. In analysis, the board has clear authority under RCW 6950-345, subsection 7, to determine the nature, form, and capacity of all containers to be used by licensees to contain cannabis, cannabis concentrates, usable cannabis, and cannabis-infused products, and the labeling requirements for these products. The term principal display panel is commonly used in the food industry and other businesses to describe the position of labeling on packaged foods and other consumer products, and is defined currently in WAC 314-55-106, subsection 3, as the portions of the surface of the immediate container or any outer container or wrapping which bears the labeling designed to be most prominently displayed, shown, presented, or examined under conditions of retail sale. In addition, the board's existing cannabis packaging and labeling guide provides more direction about the meaning of principal display panel as applied to a cylindrical cannabis package. On a curved surface, it is the front main area and does not wrap around to the sides or the back of the packaging or labeling. The illustrations presented in the packaging and labeling guide show the principal display panel clearly outlined on the cylinder of the package. The petition request here is for a rule amendment to WAC 314-55-106 to clarify that the principal display panel is the oblong portion of the cylinder versus the top or bottom. And the petition states that the effect of the requested rule change would be that cannabis processors could compliantly sell pre-rolled tubes with the warning symbol appropriately placed on the cylinder of the tube. Under existing rules, the principal display panel must already appear on the curved or oblong surface of cylindrical packages such as tubes. And in turn, the universal cannabis warning symbol must appear on this principal display panel positioned on the curved surface of the cylinder and not on the top or bottom of the cylinder, as the petition suggests. WAC 314-55-106, subsection 3, requires the position of the principal display panel to be designed to be most prominently displayed, which would not include the opposite curved surface of the cylinder or the ends of a narrow tube-shaped package that is suitable for packaging a single pre-rolled cannabis joint. As shown in the illustrations in the packaging and labeling guide, the universal cannabis warning symbol for cylindrical packaging must appear on the principal display panel, meaning it must be positioned on the curved or oblong surface of the packaging. The request of the petition to change the meaning of the term principal display panel to allow the warning symbol to appear on the oblong or curved side of the cylinder is not necessary, as this is already required by the rule. So in conclusion, for the reasons described above, director's office staff recommend that, consistent with RCW 3405-330, the board deny Michael Lucero's petition for amending WAC 314-55-106, submitted on April 29th, 2024. And thank you, and I can answer any questions about this petition later.
Great. Thanks, Mr. Gilbo. I don't see any questions on this one. I think you've given us a thorough briefing on this, and appreciate the recommendation, and I will then entertain a motion to accept the staff recommendation to decline the petition request to amend WAC 314-55-106.
I move that we accept the staff recommendation to deny the petition.
Great. I'll second that, and that's approved. Thanks, Mr. Kildon.
No, thank you.
Okay. Several more petitions we're going to act on, and Cassidy West, the Policy and Rules Manager, is here. She'll set those up. Morning.
Good morning, Chairperson and Board Member Garrett. So today I'll be presenting a petition response to three separate petitions that we received in May 2024 for adoption, amendment, or appeal of a state administrative rule that was submitted to the board. These petitions requested that the board consider rulemaking to modify the social equity license mobility requirements in WAC 314-55-570. The aim is to grant social equity licensees who applied under the previous legislation before 5080, so that was 2870, the same flexibility to locate their license as those applying under 5080. Those license flexibility are to allow the licensees under the social equity program to locate their business anywhere in the state. So just to provide a little bit of some legislative context, in Gross Second Substitute, Senate Bill 5080 was enacted in 2023, and it amended RCW 6950-335 to allow social equity license applicants and licensees to locate their license in any city, town, or county within the state. However, under the current rules, the license mobility requirements are more restrictive, reflecting the pre-5080 requirements. Licensees issued under the earlier legislation must be located in any county where they were originally allocated, which has posed significant challenges due to local zoning restrictions and bans, preventing the license holders from securing a location for the retail outlet. Just to go into the petition request a little bit more, on May 17th, the petitioner Zachary Steve submitted a request just to allow license holders the same flexibility to locate their license anywhere in the state as 5080. David Rose, who submitted a petition on May 22nd, also had a similar request, requesting the additional flexibility due to license holders facing difficulty securing a location. And then the third petition received on May 27th from Casey Calhoun requested either amending WAC 314-55-570 to allow statewide license mobility for all social equity applicants or repealing the rule entirely, arguing that the current rules conflict with the amended statute under Ingress Second Substitute Senate Bill 58. When considering what the issue being presented today, is whether the board should consider initiating the rulemaking process to amend or repeal WAC 314-55-570, subsection 4D, in response to the changes made to license mobility resulting from 5080. So when considering a petition for rulemaking, the director's office evaluates several factors, including but not limited to LCB statutory authority and obligations, alignment with the agency's policy goals and priorities, immediacy of safety, environmental, or security concerns, potential impact on public health outcomes, potential impact on criminal activity, level of public interest, and whether the issue is already under consideration in other rulemaking activities. We also consider merits of the petition and equity impacts. LCB has the authority to consider these changes. Both 2870 and 5080 grant the agency authority to establish rules implementing the social equity program. And these petitions pertain directly to the design and functioning of this program. Currently, rulemaking to implement 5080 is underway. The CR101 was filed on November 8th as WSR 23062. I'll clarify, November 8th, 2023. So we've already engaged in the rulemaking process and have planned additional stakeholder engagement to gather feedback on petitioner's request. In addition, since briefing the board last week, we've received a fourth petition with similar requests, as well as written comments on this topic. As such, there's no need for an analysis at this time. If accepted, the proposed changes would be considered as part of the ongoing rulemaking activity for 58. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you for that. I don't see any questions. I have one. Do we need to do separate motions on each petition? Anybody know? Okay. Yeah, okay. Then what I'd like to do is put them all together for one motion then. The recommendation is the same for all three. Just double checking here, yes, to decline these. So I would.
Recommendation
no.
is to accept.
Yes. Okay. So the motion is there a motion to accept the staff recommendation to accept the three petitions related to mobility and social equity applicants?
Yes, Mrs. Ali, I move that we accept.
Great. I second that, and they're approved. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Now we will move to consideration of CR 103. Daniel Jacobs, Policy and Rules Coordinator, is here. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Postman and Member Garrett. I'm here to request approval of the CR 103 for the Medical Cannabis Endorsement Rulemaking Project. If approved today, the final rules will be filed today, and the changes to WAC 314-55-080 will be effective July 19th. The board voted to accept the petition submitted by John Kingsbury in March 2023 to address requirements for retailers to maintain their medical cannabis endorsements. The CR 101 was filed back in October. After several rules team meetings and consultation with our partners at the Department of Health, the draft rule language was posted on the website at the end of February, and two stakeholder engagement sessions were held on March 11th and March 14th. Feedback received during those sessions was incorporated into the proposed draft rule language that was filed April 24th. As identified in the CR-102 memo and the CR-102 form, there are three main changes that are being done with this rule language. Firstly, a new requirement is being created that wherever the store hours are currently required to be posted, the cannabis consultant hours also have to be posted. This requirement can be satisfied by posting a window of time during which appointments can be made to meet with the cannabis consultant. The second change is to the current existing in-stock requirement that states that endorsement holders have to have medically compliant product in stock. The rule language is being amended to state that that requirement can be satisfied by having Department of Health medical product on order. And the third main change is adding in a variable cure period to allow endorsement holders to fix whatever issue they're notified of being deficient in. This cure period will range from 7 to 30 calendar days depending on the violation at issue. So because there are several different requirements for holding a medical cannabis endorsement, such as having a cannabis consultant on staff, having the ability to create medical recognition cards, it takes longer to hire a new cannabis consultant than it does to place an order for medical product or fix a broken card machine. Additionally, if a licensee has their endorsement discontinued after this cure period has passed, if they try to get their endorsement again, they'll have to submit additional information showing that the original non-compliance is no longer an issue. Since the CR-102 was filed on April 24th, we've received four written comments, including specific suggestions from advocacy groups about specifically requiring a retailer to fill out the endorsement form to get the endorsement, and also asking that this form include a space asking to identify the cannabis consultant at the time of application. The public hearing was held June 5th and no testimony was received. The specific requested changes have not been incorporated into the final rule, and I'll explain why. The current form that licensees need to fill out for getting a medical cannabis endorsement is called the LIQ 1276 form. So for this presentation, I'll just refer to it as the 1276 form. This form already is going to need to be amended as a result of this rulemaking to accurately reflect, at a minimum, the new cannabis consultant hours. While many endorsements exist for liquor licensees, and those endorsements also have separate sections of rule dedicated to them, none of the existing rules specifically require that a licensee fill out the form in order to get an endorsement. So creating such language in the rule would be a first for the LCB. Additionally, the form already includes the following language above the licensee's signature block. It says, quote, "I understand that there are continuing requirements, and the failure to meet any of these requirements at any time may result in the revocation of this authorization by the LCB." This language already serves as a de facto attestation. And so when an applicant signs this form in order to get the endorsement, they already are saying that they understand that these requirements are in place and that if they don't meet these requirements, they can have the endorsement pulled. So some of the changes that ask the form to turn into an attestation are unnecessary because the form already serves as an attestation. In response to the same concerns that actually prompted the initial filing of this petition in the first place, the licensing division has revised its process for processing medical cannabis endorsements to now require the submission of the cannabis consultant certificate with the LIQ 1276 form. This addresses a comment received on the CR-102 about identifying the cannabis consultant because licensing's process already has been revised to require the certificate to be submitted with the 1276. Additionally, our enforcement and education divisions have, as part of their process, during the final check-through before a retail licensee opens their doors, that they provide additional information about the requirements on holding a medical cannabis endorsement holders for those who have medical cannabis endorsements. Additionally, In conjunction with licensing's new process, Enforcement and Education Division contacted 26 licensees beginning in January 2024 who hadn't issued any recognition cards during the previous quarter. The data about who had and hadn't issued recognition cards was provided by the Department of Health as part of licensing's new process. 16 of these licensees asked to surrender their medical cannabis endorsements, and the remaining 10 provided evidence of their ongoing compliance. Given that the cannabis consultant certificate is already required to be submitted with the 1276 to get the medical endorsement in the first place, it doesn't seem necessary to change the 1276 to identify the cannabis consultant or to add a space, especially given the improved compliance results that have been achieved from the new cross-agency and cross-divisional processes that have been put in place. If folks may remember, when I first presented the CR 101 for this back in October, that licensing and enforcement had said that they were in the process of revamping their, they were underway of revamping their process. I was about to say process twice. And when presenting the CR 101, I said that depending on what we saw from this improved process, it might decrease the need for more rule language. And I think that the results from, you know, great collaboration between the Department of Health and between our licensing and enforcement education divisions show that that's exactly what's happened here. If we hadn't seen these results, we may very well have wanted to add more to the rule language, but we've already seen through our agency's own improved processes that compliance results have increased. Lastly, I also wanted to mention that since 1453 has become effective, licensing has seen a dramatic increase in the number of retailers applying for medical cannabis endorsements. I think the numbers were something like in the first half of the year, something like 17 in 1 month, and I think in the past 2 months it's been 40. So additionally, adding further requirements at this time when we're already seeing an increase in licensees trying to get the endorsement, I think would add further workload when we're already seeing results from licensing and enforcement and education's new processes I mentioned. So therefore, I'm requesting the board's approval for the CR 103, on the medical cannabis endorsement rulemaking. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I have one. I just want to make sure I understand this right. And talking about the last piece that you were just covering here and what you have to show at the time of application, do I understand correctly that you're saying this already today, you cannot get, a licensee could not get that endorsement unless they have the information that had been requested to be added here, which is a cannabis consultant on staff?
The cannabis consultant certificate. So my understanding is that the certificate is the certificate that's issued to the cannabis consultant by the Department of Health. I don't know if the consultant certificate identifies their employer. My understanding is the cannabis consultant certificate is, you know, saying, for example, Daniel Jacobs has a cannabis consultant certificate issued by the Department of Health. And I think that it, assuming that a licensee isn't going to submit some other person's cannabis consultant certificate.
Yeah, then just to be clear, so in that case, what you're saying, though, is that the licensee gives me Daniel Jacobs' certificate before they get their endorsement for the store.
Yes, that's correct. That's what licensing's process currently is. That's correct.
And then you said, and even after that, enforcement and education makes the visit at the end, which they make sure that they have everything they need to get that endorsement, which would include the equipment necessary to do a card, right?
So enforcement does this final visit before a retailer opens. So we're talking about,
one time. Okay.
Right. So that's it pre the retailer opening.
Right.
Versus if you have a retailer that's already open. So, for example, the folks right now who are already open, who are adding their medical cannabis endorsement because they've seen what 1453 happened, those folks need to submit the 1276 form and they need to submit a cannabis consultant certificate.
Great. So in that case, it seems to address the comment that we received on the concern of this. And then for first-time applicants, again, you won't get that endorsement if you're a new licensee until you've completed this same work, including giving us a certificate showing there's a cannabis consultant on staff.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I think that covers covers the concerns I had and others around that. And the reason I was a little bit confused was that at the end you said, staff has changed the way that we've been checking the system and it's working and showing improvements, and adding additional requirements. At this point, it would be further workload for the staff. That's where I got confused with why would there is no further workload, because they're already doing it, it sounds like, right?
Right. So okay. One of the suggestions was, for example, that specifically the attestation would be would have next to each sort of requirement on the form a space for someone to initial. And okay. what I was getting at was, if we weren't that adding that at a time when we're also seeing an increase in volume of applications is going to increase the amount of time that licensing staff are going to have to spend on each application, when we're already seeing returns on investment for the new process.
Right, great. And I think in general, we're just increasing the visibility of the program and our enforcement of it. And I hope that helps everybody understand what's going to be required. And I bet they meet that requirement. So, okay. Appreciate all that. Thank you. And appreciate your hard work on this, especially at the end, to try to get some of these things answered. Seeing no other questions for you, is there a motion to adopt the CR-103, amending WAC 314-11050? This is written wrong on here. Excuse me. Is that the right thing? No. Okay, stand by. What is the WAC that's we're amending?
The medical, sure. The endorsement WAC here is 314-55080. 1105 is the prohibited conduct WAC.
314-55, what? Oh, I'm sorry. I went to the wrong one. Golly, man. I'm sorry. Let's go back. This is not the WAC 314. This is the CR-103 for medical cannabis endorsements. Is there a motion?
I move.
Thank you.
That we adopt a motion for the CR-103 for medical cannabis endorsement.
Great. And I second. It's approved. I apologize, Mr. Jacobs. I don't know what's going on with me today. Okay, moving ahead. Alcohol-related rulemaking. And this is a consideration of a CR-103 for Act 314-11050.
Thank you, and good morning again. I'm here this morning to request approval of the CR-103 on the prohibited conduct rulemaking. If approved today, rule will be filed immediately, and the prohibited conduct rule at 314-11050 will be repealed effective July 19th. Consistent with engrossed substitute Senate Bill 6105, in addition to repealing the prohibited conduct rule, we're removing cross-references to it in six other rules. I've identified those six other rules a few times publicly, but if you'd like, I'm happy to do so again at the end here. CR-101 was filed on February 14th, following some enforcement activities in Seattle at the end of January. An engrossed substitute Senate Bill 6105 was amended in the second half of February to instruct LCB to repeal the prohibited conduct rule, and the governor signed that bill at the end of March. While the board's initial intention with the CR-101 was to explore the possibility of amending or repealing the prohibited conduct rule, 6105, in addition to the nearly unanimous public feedback we received urging for full repeal, has led us towards repeal. CR-102 was filed on April 24th. We received two written comments, both supporting the repeal, between the CR-102 filing and the public hearing held June 5th. During the public hearing, one person testified in favor of the repeal. Therefore, we haven't made any changes, and I'm requesting the board's approval for the CR-103 on the prohibited conduct rulemaking. Thank you, and I can answer any questions.
Okay. I don't see any questions. Let's see if I can get this one right. Is there a motion for board adoption of the CR-103 for WAC 314-11050, known as prohibited conduct?
I move that we adopt.
And I second that that is approved. Thanks, Mr. Jacobs. Appreciate the work.
Thank you.
We are to the public comment period of the meeting. Everyone who has signed up will have up to 4 minutes to speak. We ask that you limit your comments to LCB business and please refrain from any personal attacks on anybody else who testified or otherwise. I will, in fact, mention if I think someone has wandered off that, and we'll save your time so you can get back on track. Reminder for those in the room, the microphones in the ceiling are really sensitive. They'll pick up paper rustling or just about anything else, including side conversations. So side conversations and go outside. Meetings being recorded, as always, and be available online. If you're online, which will go to you first, I'll Colin, you don't raise your hand, please, but Dustin will find you in the queue that we have here, and we'll call on you, and then we'll give you a second to make sure you're connected, and we'll give you your 4 minutes. When you get to 30 seconds left, Dustin will break in just to give you a heads up that you got 30 seconds left, and then we'll ask you to stop right at that point. Okay, our first person signed up online is Vicki Christofferson.
Good morning, Chair Postman and Member Garrett. I'm Vicki Christofferson here today on behalf of the Washington Canna Business Association. Happy to be here to address you today. First, I wanted to thank Deputy Director Tony Hood and CFO Rachel Swanner for joining us in Walla Walla a couple weeks ago for our spring meeting. We appreciated them representing the agency as we talked about issues addressing up to the industry across the state. I just wanted to bring up a couple issues for you to consider as you continue to deliberate on important issues. One, as the regulated industry, both parents and grandparents and those who have chosen to be regulated in this industry, there continues to be really strong concern about the rampant continued availability of unregulated, untested, untaxed product in outlets across our state and online. And it's extremely troubling to all of us. I know it is to you. And it presents an unfair competition to our industry. Additionally, it presents a threat to the health and safety of our children and to all of us across our state. Sorry, hold on. I'm so sorry. So sorry if I could have a couple minutes of my time left.
Yeah, no
back. Sorry about that. Issues presenting continued presenting problems to us across the industry. I just wanted to address the rule set that's before you now. We worked really hard in concert with this agency in 2023 for legislation to address this issue. This legislation passed by the legislature 5367 that expanded the definition of THC to try to capture these products that are outside the regulated market. This rule set that we've seen before you seems to be more focused on expanding testing and requirements on our regulated industry rather than the sense of urgency around getting the products outside the regulated industry. We've submitted comments around this issue, but really would like to see a renewed focus and sense of urgency around this real problem, because no matter what you do to us to continue to strengthen regulations on the regulated industry, if we don't get our hands on what's happening outside, it really doesn't make any difference. So just want to reiterate the need to really keep that strong. The other piece I just want to flag for you, and it really came up, we spent a lot of time talking about it in Walla Walla, and we're going to continue to talk about it and appreciate all of the conversations we've had with your staff as well as those at Department of Health and Department of Agriculture, is that we all really need to keep an eye to the integrity of the regulated market as we work to implement 1453 and implement the really well-meaning tax break for medical patients. I'll date myself here and say, listening to KZOK this weekend, heard some very interesting ads targeting those that they were promised to
seconds.
Get a medical card. I think we just need to be really careful and work very carefully to make sure that only those intended to get medical cards are getting them, and that we're keeping the integrity of the system in mind while we implement this bill. So I thank you for your time and apologize for the interruption in this Zoom world. So thank you very much.
It's okay, it happens. Thank you. Next person signed up is Brooke Davies.
Good morning, Chair Postman and Board Member Garrett. My name is Brooke Davies, here today on behalf of the Washington Canna Business Association. Just wanted to cover a couple other items that Vicki was unable to cover in her time. Specifically, again, thank the LCB staff for coming to Walla Walla and participating in our conference. I wanted to chat briefly a little bit about the packaging and labeling conversation. I heard at the EMT meeting last week this subject came up. So just wanted to provide some additional context, specifically to the concerns that were raised in Walla Walla. I think Deputy Director Hood mentioned it, but I wanted to clarify what those concerns were to get that on your radar. The concerns that were discussed in Walla Walla around the packaging and labeling submission and approval process were specific to edible products that are already approved that plan to seek a DOH compliance under this new 1453. So if they're able to do the additional testing, they'll be required to then put a sticker on that says that that product is DOH compliant. And the questions that were coming up were, will those then be required to be submitted for a new approval just because they're adding the sticker? And our understanding was that we have not gotten a clear answer on that yet. And so that was kind of what folks were asking in Walla Walla. And our, you know, just sort of ask to the agency would be that, considering you saw sort of the number of submissions and the volume, and that's, you know, taking up a lot of time, we would ask that if the packaging is already approved, that the addition of that DOH compliance sticker not be required to then be reapproved, as long as it's not covering up any important information and things like that. So just wanted to kind of clarify what that question was. And then moving on just to talking more about packaging and labeling in general, I sent you all an email this morning documenting the history of WACA's advocacy on this issue. Listening to the presentation last week, I think, you know, one of the things that stood out was the number of submissions that are then required to be resubmitted or make changes and things like that. And so we've long advocated that a lot of that is due to what we see as being kind of the subjective process of not really understanding what the rules are, and sometimes a package is approved and then you submit another one that's very similar and it's not approved, and kind of that process seems to be a little bit arbitrary. And I also included a document that sort of shows, this is from 2020 when we were advocating on the same issue, but what the cost of a redesign is. And it's really significant. And so I know that also there was some discussion around, well, what if licensees paid for the submissions? Would that onus on them and hopefully, you know, decrease the amount of resubmissions that have to take place? And so just want to make sure that you're also aware that each time a licensee has to redesign a package, even if it's just changing a color, there are significant costs associated with that. So it really is the desire to get it approved on the first time if possible. And I think, Chair Postman, you really spoke to this in your comments, but we would definitely be interested in kind of working with the agency at looking back at the rules and figuring out, like, what really is the goal of the packaging rules, and are there places where we can streamline it a little bit? I think we all agree that, you know, the real purpose of those rules
is to make sure, like,
the products aren't overly appealing to children and that all those sorts of things. And so if there's a way that we could work together on kind of really diving into those and making them, you know, a little bit more streamlined, we'd be happy to do that, because I think if we could remove some of that subjectivity, that would really decrease the amount of resubmissions and going back and forth. And so thank you so much for your consideration.
Great, thank you. Next person signed up is Christopher King.
Good over it, but... Okay. All right, guys. I just have a couple of questions here. And first off, I guess we'll start with the question of whether or not Mr. Postman or anybody else at the board has the notion of, again, reducing speaking time to 3 minutes for any reason going forward. And if you did so, Mr. Postman, would you do it in a way that doesn't just impact black and brown speakers at their, you know, at our issue? Would you earn any thoughts on that? Mr. Postman?
You know, I'm not going to answer your questions in this forum. I've told you 100 times, all you have to do is email me, not 400 people email me, and I'll answer any question you send me.
I'll ask you what I want to ask you when I want to ask you. That's how that goes. Next. You don't recall ever doing that for the groups outside of black and brown, do you? That's rhetorical. Let's move it along. What we have with the LCB, and I got my shackles today, is basically you guys are a regulatory capture agency. Okay, you created this oligarchian thing where you and your mostly white cronies, you know, get all the money. Everybody knows it, okay? Let's talk about Libby Haynes briefly, even though Libby is not an original pioneer. Bottom line is, y'all manipulated something back when she was the only black person to get through the so-called lottery, and you had this spousal requirement that you didn't rescind it during COVID, and guess what? When you rescinded it, she still never got a license, okay? Shot! Now, you've got a situation in her appeal where I think the figure is like 75% of the applicants have valid issues between Ponder and LCB on the appeal, okay? But yet, nobody's being heard, nobody's being reversed, and the end product is illusory anyway because you can't get a store, okay? So that's a problem there. Everything with you is illusory. You know, that's the thing, okay? So, gosh. So now what they did with Libby on the scoring is that they went in there and they said, oh, look, first off, she proved by preponderance of the evidence that it was a cannabis conviction, and she had a jail sentence. She had prison sentence there. And so under the rubric, the first way, she should have, you know, been the top scorer in her region, but now you've reworked it, and they took out the cannabis, and they're just monkeying with things to keep her out of the winner's circle. It's just ridiculous. All right? Yeah. The whole Ponder process leads me pondering how this even happened. But next, and between you and Ponder, you guys are both jointly separately liable, I'm sure. So, next, let's talk about Co-op 138. It's a fact that these people came before you, all right, and I was with them. When your agent, Shannon Angel, wrote an erroneous report saying that there was no licensed entity there regarding license number 412691, their license number is not that. It's something else. I don't have it right in front of me, but it's not that. Their license number is 428651, okay? And based on this erroneous thing, there was a raid on their facility with Frank Black and the State Patrol and a bunch of people, all right? And they stopped his heart. The guy could have died because of your actions. And at that time, Holly Garrett stands up, reaches out, oh, I'm going to reach out to you guys. She looked up Facebook a couple times for Roxana. Now, Roxana, she a Hispanic woman, and Michael, he a white boy, but he's not a white boy like your favorite white boy. It's like Widmer, that quasi-criminal, all right? So you ran him over.
Christopher, you have 30 seconds.
Good thing. You did nothing to help him, even though your own agency's fault that he's in the predicament that he's in. And four people who need care got kicked out of the system because one of your new stores moved in their neighborhood. You know, they came to the nuisance, they kicked the nuisance out, and now medical people are not getting the treatment that they need. Everybody's shackled up when it comes to you guys. Shackles on my feet, shackles on my hands. That's what you do.
Christopher, that's your time.
Oh, you have a good day.
Next person signed up is Sammy Saw.
Good morning, everyone. Can you guys hear me?
You bet. Go ahead.
Good morning. Well, I have just feedback, and that's from all of us here in, like, as East African American. So about to have those license for the social equity mobile, we need two things to be happening. First of all, if you guys want to approve something like this, should be after 3 years from now. But to have it mobile in your same county right away, but to have it all mobile all over, I have a job. I'm a social equity winner. And I'm the first pioneers when it was medical back then. And by being through, you know, we are not being getting the equal opportunity. And it was not justice. And I just win my license. We cannot even find location. Even the location we find, every shop, oh, this is 350 feet. You cannot have it here. We need to remove this. We need to have equal opportunity. There is no limit. You can be right next to him. This is a free market. We cannot be being done to us like that. Even they have 3 locations in close to rental and water. They were together. Why us now? We cannot have location together. The second thing is having people to be mobile all over the state. That says no, I don't think so. It's fair for us. It should be okay. Let's go do that because I love them to have the same thing. But after 3 years from now, but they can, you can move in your the same county right away. Because right now it became hard for us. You know, for example, they have somebody holding location because waiting until this to happen. And we cannot even get location. You know, as Muslim, I cannot go and get the location. You know, so it was not just we need you guys to work with us. Second, why is too much regulation on the for the endorsement for the medical? Because we back then, I was the first medical. It don't need all that. The only thing it needs the right age and if it's that person qualified to have, you know, this one and this to be tested, the canopy to be tested, that's all. But having this department, that department, okay, they can have a certification. Yes, you are old enough and you can verify and you can read and write and you know this is what you need and this is what they need because this is for releasing pain for them. And as long as you have it at retail and you're taking taxes, at the same way, that one, he comes with a medical card. What the more thing to do from the health department other than to make sure this is being approved by being tested, there is no anything affect a human being. I think it's too much rule and regulation to something. It's make it hard for us. And we need this licensing as our social equity first because it's not fair for us. We've been closing the past, and now all those people have been shops. It's been open. Every licensing is 5 licenses. Every person 5 licenses. Like Kusuba Kingi said a long time ago, this is a nickel. It's nickel. It means 5. And this nickel, whatever it is 1. It's a double standard. It's no justice. I'm not against colors. I'm not against anything. But I'm looking forward to be treated as.
Sam, you have 30 seconds.
Okay, the second thing is I really would love to see the next licensing to be like half for the pioneers, the one they used to have shop, like Libby and Kevin Shelton before 2016, and the other half to be for the point, for the people that have conviction. This is being justice because since the HB 2070, from the beginning, it meant for those pioneers, the one they used to be before 2016, and the world has changed. That's make us lose the trust
in LCD.
Thank you.
And the legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sy. I appreciate that. Okay, that's it for the people that have signed up online. And in the room here, we have two. The first is Paul Bress.
Hello, Mr. Postman, everyone attending. My name is Paul Bress. I am a retailer currently, Happy Trees, also a SCA. Applicant. One of the reasons I'm here today is to be a face also for the black or brown or an existing retailer who was targeted, fined, and again attacked by LCB so much in the past that this is the group we've been working with, and you guys had your chance to see how it rolled out, and you know, it was nothing nice. So I hope to be a face for a lot of other black and brown as a reminder that we cannot be treated this way. It's, in my thought, it's a lot like a pumpkin patch of SCAs. Just because the pumpkin patch comes in, everyone's afraid ghosts, goblins, and green smoke and all this other bad stuff is gonna happen, and I feel as if stereotype for being black is a major thing, especially still with the LCB. I want to talk about the DIA for on the rubric, having places like South Tacoma where it qualifies for a DIA, then all of a sudden, because some years go by, they get rid of some parks and so forth, they can now remove the statuses. Now, for this decade, it's no longer DIA. It's like surviving the hilltop, and then just because you clean up the hilltop some and get rid of all the black, brown, and remove some violence, and all of a sudden people who survived it no longer get credit for being in that DIA, again, that survived and helped make that DIA a better area than it is today. 2 minutes left. I want to talk about SB 5053, sponsored by Ann Rivers, when LCB just gave additional 2 pot licenses out to a lot of people who were not deserving, who were not pioneers, to receive those. Because that was already in effect, I would hope with additional licenses for the retailers coming out. Again, as Sam even said, a lot of this doubling up for licenses should go to the pioneers. Someone like myself, again, missed the last round, and we're even talking about making the rubric easy. It just seems silly. The rubric should be tougher than before. If anything, it should have a letter to explain who you are or whatnot to make sure that we get it right, because, again, it's getting further and further from the true intent, and that is to help the black or brown that were so left out. And without seeing the actual numbers, but meeting a lot of the SEAs personally myself already, it does not seem to me that it went to the tent that it was supposed to be, and nor does the next rollout seem as if we're trying to protect what all that work was done for the tent for this. And another thing, just real common sense-wise, to keep getting back in line, again, I've been in the line from the very beginning for the rollouts of additional license, missed there, missed social equity. For people who applied who didn't get in, there should be some bearing for the people who applied and did not get a license. To always have some way to bring in new people and think we all just want new people to that can just
You have 30 seconds.
Come in and dilute the intent or squander the intent seems the most unreasonable thing. It needs to be locked down. It needs to be tighter, and we need to, again, help what we want. The goal for this is to have black or brown involvement and legacy wealth for black and brown people who helped champion to get the legalization for cannabis. Thank you.
Thank you. Mike Asai.
Good morning, Chair Postman, Board Member Garrett, and I guess Valdrop's not here, members in the audience. My name is Mike Asai with Emerald City Collective, First Downtown Dispensary, Downtown Seattle Dispensary. I'm also the Vice President of Black Excellent Cannabis. Starting on October 26, 2020, the Washington State Liquor Cannabis Board was repeatedly urged to make House Bill 2870 social equity licenses mobile. Despite consistent advocacy over more than 2 years, the board's refusal to act has led to the significant decisions faced today. This situation could have been addressed in 2021 and 2022 legislative sessions. Social equity in cannabis is fundamentally about rectifying the injustices suffered by the black descendants of slaves and brown communities who were disproportionately targeted and harmed by the war on drugs, which was effectively the war on cannabis. The LCB issued licenses to bad actors from the medical cannabis era who did not qualify under Senate Bill 5052 state law, further marginalizing those already affected. This agency continues to only partly listen to the very communities the social equity program is meant to support. Former legislative director Chris Thompson consistently misled us, claiming legislative action was necessary to make House Bill 2870 licenses mobile. This was never true. The persistent disregard for the needs and voices of the black and brown community members raises the question, is the LCB serving the public, or is it swayed by WACA? Black Excellent Cannabis is here to hold the LCB accountable for past, current, and future actions. We stand firm because no one else will. This agency has retaliated against cannabis pioneers and advocates, and is currently retaliating against me, Mike Asadi, the vice president by Exit Cannabis, simply for speaking the truth. The refusal to engage with Black Exit Cannabis because of Mike Asadi's tort claim shows a continued disrespect by the LCB to Blacks in Washington State. We have tried on many occasions to have positive dialogue about past issues, but this agency brushed us off, like it has always done to the Black community. But these actions will not obscure the truth. Darkness will always be exposed by the light, and the light is shining brighter every day. As rulemaking for Senate Bill 5080 is underway, it is crucial to emphasize that certificate holders should not, I repeat, should not be included in the social equity program. Including them dilutes the true intent of social equity licenses. High rubric scores should determine eligibility, not minimal qualifications without proper evaluation. Our initial support for certificate holders was based on the assumption that they included Black descendants of slaves and brown individuals. Since this is not the case, we have revised our stance, remove certificate holders from this program. We hope the LCB is genuinely listening. Thank you. We hope the LCB is now genuinely listening to the communities the program is intended to benefit through concrete actions rather than empty words. Certificate holders must pave their own way and not exploit the Black and brown community's struggles. The true victims of the war on cannabis deserve real equity and justice. Thank you.
Well said. Thank you. And that is the last person signed up in the end of the agenda, so we are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.